Chapter 2. Mysterious Circumstance. Cole looked out his window and viewed the dreaded rain. His eyes carefully followed an unusually large drop of water, all the way down the pane. As he watched, something strange happened. Something that had never happened before. Something that was so unexpected and wild, Cole couldn't believe it. Something that made no logical sense at all. And regardless of the fact that he didn't believe it, it still happened. Without any warning, Cole found himself precariously attached to an extraordinary rope contraption by a ripped harness of sorts. One of his legs was caught in the straps, while his other dangled freely. The broader belt-like rigging that should have been cinched around his waist was dangling in a knot and sagging near his feet. The only thing that kept him from plunging headlong to a bloody end was his death grip on the swaying rope. Terrified and confused, Cole hung on for dear life and did his best to inch his way upward. He was motivated by what lay beneath him. A quick peek revealed that he was nearly at the top of a jagged cliff wall, some 500 or more feet tall, or at least that was how far he could see, because fog engulfed the bottom. Two strange bodies were busily working their way upward, attached to the same four-rope device as he, with one of them trailing close behind and the other fumbling much farther below. Metallic pulleys glittered in the afternoon sun, catching Cole's attention momentarily. They were fastened at various intervals along the lines, aiding the climbers in a way he had never seen done before, despite having repelled plenty with Pap. A distant, low-pitched groaning of waves crashing against rocks hinted at the terrain that was hidden by the haze. The sound also muffled a disgruntled conversation between the lowest visible climber and someone else that remained out of view. The circumstance appeared terribly dangerous. Cole did his best to shimmy and scamper up the last part of the cliff. However, he found it difficult to climb, as though he had been at it for a long time. Each tug made his arms ache horribly, like the muscle burn of a final feeble push-up. And as he struggled to move, the faulty harness additionally hindered him, slowing his sluggish ascent. Meanwhile, a sharp pain intermittently shot up his back, joining the constant throbbing in his head. "Hurry up now, up the bank like a good lad," bellowed the closest climber, who was quickly encroaching on Cole. The mystery man had cut the distance between them down to a couple of yards, making his face clearly visible. His wrinkles from age doubled with concern across his broad forehead as he yelled at Cole. "Another two blanks and you'd be fishing for flies with your toes, and we'd be right behind you. This is hardly the place to play around. We're not out of sight yet. Don't slack on the trilang. Fasten it up to the post, or Dungo and Bowler will lose it for sure. You should have cleared the top ages ago." Faintly, Cole squeaked a concerned cry, only audible to the old man. "I'm not able to..." "Quick, tighten your end," responded the man, punctuating his words with greater conviction, much like the captain of a boat commanding young shipmates. Miraculously, Cole's hands instinctively obeyed. "Yes, like that," continued the man. "For a moment, I thought you'd lost your freshy mind, swinging around harnessless. Just because you didn't head back down with Dungo doesn't give you liberty to dawdle." Cole heaved a leg up and caught the ledge at the top the moment he was close enough and spun his body around until he was positioned on his back, with dirt comfortingly beneath him. Still tangled in the riggings, he stared up at the sky and attempted to catch his breath. "Keep it up, boy," yelled the old man, chiding Cole for taking a moment to rest. "Don't let the line slack till we're all clean of this cliff. With the cords twisted and rubbing, we're certain to pay." The seasoned climber continued to grumble until he finally reached the top and pulled his gangly body over the lip. He staggered back and forth, breathing heavily, while clearing rope and gear from between his legs. As he did, he added an unusual stretching dance that made his 6'6" frame block the sunlight momentarily from reaching Cole's face. Eventually, a prominent cracking sound burst from his middle back. "Ah, that feels better," he confessed, glancing disapprovingly at Cole before poking his head dangerously over the edge of the cliff. "Dungo, do you still have it?" he bellowed anxiously. From hundreds of feet down, a muffled response wafted back, unintelligible. Cole stared in amazement and disbelief. He couldn't understand where he was, or how in the world he had gotten there, or why his clothes were different. Instead of Levi's, his pants were made of rough cloth, and his shirt was a matrix of black leather wrappings. He also had on a loose, deep maroon jacket that had been constructed of a thicker hide. When he attempted to rise in order to help the elderly gentleman with the gear, for Cole was prodded by a dozen cross looks from him, The world spun around until Cole had to resort to a crouching position on the ground in order to avoid passing out. A sideways glance revealed that the old man's mood had shifted from annoyed to slightly concerned when he saw Cole collapse. "Are you solid, boy?" he asked, sensing something was wrong. But his pressing concern for the difficulties which were unfolding farther down the cliff's face hindered him from pursuing deeper. Before Cole could respond, the man had already wholeheartedly turned his attention back to readjusting the ropes and studying the progress of the other climbers. Bathed in sunlight, the aged gentleman's hair was a bright white, or at least the hair he had left. Most of the top of his head revealed sunburned, shiny skin, and his body was as skinny as the wind-blown trees lining the cliff's edge, interrupted occasionally by muscles that rippled under his wrinkles. He wore a short-sleeved shirt and tan pants, nothing special, and appeared very ordinary, except for one distinguishing feature. A browning, reddish, round band, much like a garden snake, encircling his lower neck, characteristic of a treader. Cole didn't recognize everything all at once, but things did seem to fade in and out of his memory, like bits and pieces of a past dream. Information about the treader people and their customs filled his mind as though he had known them all of his life. Even the old man was no longer a complete stranger. It was like someone had flipped on a light switch, making it possible to see much of what had been hidden before. The seasoned climber standing before Cole was named Triticello. He was a lover of freedom and a man who had spent much of his life doing good for other people, or so it seemed. That's what the blurry memory suggested. As Cole processed the situation, he tried to retrace his bizarre entrance. However, before he had time to so much as think of his bedroom, the old man yelled to take cover and jumped to the ground. Two rocks, each at least the size of an apple, cleared the cliff's edge and whizzed a distance beyond them into an adjoining forest. One stone hit a 20-foot birch tree and split the tree in half, sending pieces of flaky white bark into the air like confetti. The other landed in a nearby bog and produced a fountain of mud and weeds. "That couldn't have come from the dog paddler," complained Triticello. He looked at Cole and added, "How many ships did you see while we waited?" "Me," muttered Cole. "I didn't see any." "Not even in the distance," replied Triticello skeptically. "Whoever's firing at us is certainly floating on something bigger than the 100-man ship Dungo and Bowler just visited. I'd say it's Dredarius himself, judging by the height of those balls." "How many did you see?" asked Cole, turning the question back at him. For despite Cole's general knowledge of the world around him, he didn't know anything about the sea or the ships down below. "I stayed above the fog line," said Triticello quickly. "Remember? I was guarding our retreat." He crawled over to the cliff's edge and peered out carefully. "Dungo, do you still have it?" Faintly, yet clearly audible this time, a voice responded.
"Oh, I have it, but all de stuff in de air bumped Bowler into a glander's pit. I dink his line is clean cut, and don't ask me to head down right now either. Dredarius is in de open with at least 300 poorlings, maybe more. It's not worth my skin for his. Besides, we can come back when it's quiet and dry to retrieve him. If he can handle the glander's ding without too much fuss, he just might stay in one piece."
Dungo's voice faded for a moment into a muffled noise. The sound of cracking branches made it clear his ascent was quickly nearing the higher, wooded part of the cliff wall. Triticello stood back up and shook his head, still cautiously peering over the gulf. It was evident that he didn't like a plan going south on him, and Bowler's line breaking was definitely in that category. "Glanters," he muttered to himself. "I'd take a bath in red ants before spending the day sitting in a pit of glanter worm slime. That stuff." His voice trailed off as he recalled past experiences with the burning chemical created by glanter worms. The worms themselves were small and harmless. However, their slime was painful. Cole slid closer to the edge and peeked out, watching for incoming debris. A volley of stones, flung from somewhere below, pierced the blanket of fog and pelted the cliff wall. Fortunately, this time they didn't rise as high as they had before, so all of them failed to clear the top.
"Dodd," grumbled a climber that was now nearing completion. "What was your problem back there?"
His cold, black eyes were sternly looking at Cole, who could now see from where he sat that Dungo was a monstrous creature, not a man. Dungo glared between two rugged trees that were lodged in a crack, both jutting directly horizontal for about 10 and vertical for another 10. He grabbed at the branches and pushed them out of his way with two hands, while using two more to work upward on the rope. His two legs moved quickly below the foliage, clawing at the rocky wall with his massive feet. "You mean me?" squeaked Cole apprehensively, once again trying to stand up. He held the trunk of a baby pine to steady himself as he poked his head over the edge far enough to get a better look at the four-armed thing. Dungal made eye contact with him for a few quick seconds before Cole pulled back.
"No, I mean the other Dodd,"
roared the creature, agitated.
"Of course I mean you. All of a sudden it was like you never scaled up cliffs with a dryling in your whole freshy life. Thanks to you, I have to go back down to help Bowler. We could have all been your flow feed."
A few mangy scavenger yearflows floated on the rising breeze just yards away. They were mostly talons and beaks, making Dungo's point more poignant. One carried the remains of a dead fish, with two more pursuing vigorously, trying to steal it. "Well, to be honest," squeaked Cole, "I don't know where I am." In his mind, he continued, "Or who any of you are." His thoughts drifted to the immense pain in his back. It was nauseating and caused his eyes to blur. He clung tightly to the young tree at his side and tried to stay conscious, taking deep breaths of the briny breeze that blew in his face. Cole thought to himself, "There must be a logical explanation. Maybe I fell asleep and was just dreaming that I almost died on a cliff with a..." Cole's mind trailed as he shuddered, but unfortunately his mouth mumbled his thoughts quietly. "Couple of ugly things. I must be dreaming." Dungo's tail announced his completion of the ascent, smacking Cole's aching back squarely in the middle, sending him to his knees. "Ouch! Ah!" yelped Cole in pain. "Dungo, that's enough," ordered Tritacello. "Dodd's not well."
"Yeah, you must have been dreaming back there," continued Dungo, towering over Cole threateningly. The smell of his sweaty fur was disgusting. "And thanks to your dreaming, we have to come back for Bowler later. Besides, who you calling Bugly? Your pale white skin and puny arms look like a tiny bug to me. If you hadn't been the best point man at the trials, there is no way you'd be on a mission like this. You definitely weren't chosen for your strength. Ha, ha."
"I didn't call you Bugly," choked Cole, looking away. He hoped the monster wouldn't eat him.
"Then what was that you muttered?"
"Stop it and quiet down, both of you," chimed Tritacello, with the voice of a father scolding two disobedient sons. "I'm sure Dodd just got a little flush in the head while we waited for you and Bowler. It took quite a bit longer than the hour you promised."
"You can't blame us for unwanted company,"
rebutted Dungo, spinning around to face Tritacello.
"Trudarius was supposed to be out to sea, remember? Just a dog paddler in the bay. That's what you said. It's quite a bit different raiding a wired ship. With the Magellan docked close by, we're lucky to be alive."
"The Magellan," groaned Tritacello. "I knew it. Only Dredarius's vessel has the platforms and decks to support a hellstorm like that. Did you pull the lower leads?"
"I did," said Dungo. "Nobody will be climbing these ropes from down below."
He poked at the lines with his foot. "Good," responded Tritacello, looking a bit relieved. Still, worry cloaked his face like a mask. Cole slid backward, up against the baby pine, and wished to be farther away from Dungo. Part of him hoped that another tree-chopping stone would come flying through the air and send Stinky to his knees. The pain Cole felt was bad enough that he could only watch. Running away to hide wasn't an option, since he knew he'd likely pass out before he hit the forest. Tritacello tugged at the latches of a small bag he wore at his waist. His long, wiry fingers looked like the legs of a spider spinning a web as he finished the lengthy process of unhitching. Once the mouth of his compartment was gaping, he turned to Dungo, opened his hands wide, and asked for the tri-blot.
"Here you go,"
responded Dungo slyly. He faked handing him the tri-blot by rolling it from one hand to the next. He chuckled as he showed off his agility, moving all four hands at the same time, and said gloatingly,
"You have to pick one hand, but dink careful, because you only get one chance."
Tritacello scolded him, saying, "We don't have time for games, Dungo. Besides, my chance to choose a good hand ended before we started on this journey, didn't it?" Dungo quickly relinquished the tri-blot and began amusing himself by squishing blue and red swamp beetles with his enormous feet. The tri-blot was a round stone, about the size of a baseball, with three distinct dimples equidistant on the sides. It glowed a mystical yellow as the sun crept through the almost transparent sphere. Cole watched Tredicel carefully tuck the tri-blood in his bag. The stone was treated with such caution that Cole knew it had to be important. He couldn't imagine anyone treating a whole bag of emeralds or diamonds any differently. After the treasure was stowed, Tredicella nudged Dungo into action, and both of them busily packed gear into a coffin-sized box. Dungo was not only tall, he was massive. From the rear, he resembled a very large golden-brown hyena, but with a longer tail and four ape-like arms. He stood upright in a hunching sort of way, with such bad posture that his head was nearly concealed from behind, allowing only his two little horns to show, protruding from between his ears. His face, however, was not entirely different than that of a hairy man with a thick beard. When the job was done and the ground was cleared of everything but the four ropes, Tritacello constrained Dungo into hefting the container into a nearby hedge. Logs and branches were then used to cover the box until it was completely concealed from view. Surprisingly, despite Tritacello's repeated commands that made it clear he was eager to get moving away from trouble, when the moment came to pick up and leave, he looked hesitant. "Do you think Bowler will be all right until later?" he asked, looking at Dungo.
"I don't know," grumbled Dungo, his fur bristling along the ridge of his backbone. "But there's no way I'm going back down. The cloud's melting from the sun, so we'd die for sure trying to help him. I nearly didn't escape before. Without the fog, the tri-blot would still be back there, and my arms and legs would be all over the deck. My tail would be tacked to the wall, and my beautiful glitzers would be fastened to someone's necklace."
"Don't kid yourself, Dungo. Nobody would want your horns around their neck," protested a wearied, hairy creature as it crawled out of the bushes on the cliff's edge. He was as massive as Dungo, only built differently, more like a giant licorice-black gorilla with a clean-shaven human face.
"Bowler!" exclaimed Dungo, looking surprised and concerned. "I thought you were stuck way down there. It's great to see you made it up anyway. We were all so worried."
"Hey, thanks for helping me," interrupted Bowler sarcastically. "I appreciated you taking the time to throw me an extra line since mine broke." Bowler's voice was punctuated by numerous displays of physical animation. His waving arms and feet seemed to make the story come to life, and the smirk he wore indicated that he was jovial, not malicious. Despite his 7-foot stature, he wasn't scary, at least not to Cole. On the contrary, he was like a rescuing angel. He was someone that stood taller than Dungo and could clearly hold his own with him. "When you abandoned me," he continued, creeping in the direction of Dungo, "I miraculously managed to stay alive by dragging against the cliff wall, trying to slow my fall, and was finally fortunate enough to land in a glanter pit." Bowler's posture straightened, showing his muscular physique. "Do you know how hard it is to work your way up the rocks without a line? I nearly didn't make it to the ropes. And all the while I had the pleasure of dodging stones hurled by Dredarius and his junky porlings, who somehow managed to notice me while missing to see you, the four-armed wonder on a string." Dungo backed away from Bowler, who was approaching him. "Oh yeah," Bowler added, pausing to glance at Cole pleasantly before focusing back on Dungo. "Did I mention? Glanterworm slime is remarkably good at burning. Do you know what it feels like? Let me give you a hint." Bowler faked a stumble, seized one of Dungo's legs with his right arm, and proceeded to wipe his left arm up and down it until green slime oozed from between the struggling limbs.
"Stop! Stop!" whined Dungo. "Wiping the stuff on me doesn't get us to Highgate any faster. Besides, it was Dodd's great moves back there that let you down, not mine."
"Oh, not Dodd," said Bowler confidently, releasing Dungo's leg. He then began wiping the slime on the grass. "I've seen Dodd work, and trust me, all of that back there wasn't because of him. It was because of you, Dungo." "It doesn't matter," interrupted Tritacello, joining the conversation. "The important thing is that you're safe now, so let's get moving." A barrage of stones cleared the top and narrowly missed hitting Dungo. They pulverized trees and sent dirt and mud flying in the air. It was a real battle zone. Cole slid to the edge and peered down. The wind and sun had melted the fog into a light haze, revealing two ships in the bay and three more approaching. One of them was gigantic. "We've got to get out of here," said Tritacello, standing over Cole. "Now that everyone on the Magellan can see where they're shooting, they'll be a lot more accurate. And one of those ships could have flutters." "You saw what happened down below," said Bowler, addressing Tritacello, while helping Cole to his feet. He was careful to aid Cole with his arm that wasn't messy. It doesn't matter, repeated Tredicello, pointing toward the forest. He was ready to be done with talking about what had gone wrong, though by his refusal to condemn Dungo, he was suggesting that he had a conflicting opinion. When Cole staggered wearily, Bowler picked him up and swung him onto his shoulders. But he didn't even flip me a spare line, complained Bowler, petitioning Tredicello earnestly. His tone had become less lighthearted and more serious as he futilely sought redress. He wanted Tredicello to at least acknowledge Dungo had participated in the fiasco by acting cowardly. However, his needling didn't work. Tredicello turned a cold shoulder and marched swiftly toward the forest, followed closely by Dungo, and the only things he said had nothing to do with the cliffs. "We'll have to move faster than we originally planned," he ordered, when he noticed Bowler looking longingly at the pond that fed the bog. "Maybe you can wash in a little while, once we're deep enough in the thickets." It wasn't what Bowler wanted to hear. The glanterworm slime was still clinging to his legs and left arm, and there was a fair patch of it on his posterior, too. All of the wiping and rolling hadn't cleared it off. Water was needed. Nevertheless, Tredicello wasn't about to concede in the slightest. He was bent on keeping the Triblot safe and was willing to do whatever it took. The group fell into line with the old man taking the lead. He hunched under the weight of an overflowing bag that was filled with items he hadn't stowed in the coffin, though it didn't stop him from moving quickly. He took large strides into the bog that separated them from the safety of the trees. Dungo scurried close behind Tredicello, hunching as he walked, but without a bag. His enormous feet noisily clopped against the sludge. Bowler followed with a relaxed stride. He stayed relatively in line, though he purposefully stepped in the deepest-looking patches of mud, hoping to ease the burning sensation on his feet and ankles. As Cole sat on Bowler's shoulders, he searched for answers. What's going on? Why are they calling me Dodd? Why am I here? And where is here? Cole thought carefully and retraced his steps. He remembered sitting in his bedroom over by the window, watching drops of rain paint pictures on the glass pane. His computer was humming quietly in the corner, displaying sea life as a screensaver. Josh and Alex were napping in their bunks. The last thing Cole could remember was watching a large raindrop. This must be a really bad nightmare, he mumbled to himself. His voice got louder as he went on. And I'm having a hard time waking up, thanks to not getting enough sleep last night. This must be one of those nightmares, the kind Josh has all the time, the kind where Mom sits for 10 minutes with Josh, trying to wake him up before he finally stops crying. I bet I'm thrashing around in everything. Despite telling himself that it was a dream, Cole had plenty of doubts in the back of his mind. Everything seemed too real, and the pain in his head and back was worse than anything he had ever experienced before. It's got to be a dream, Cole continued. It's a crazy one summoned by Aunt Hilda's zesty tacos. Bowler lunged through a sticky part of the bog and slipped. He regained control before falling, but not before nearly dumping Cole into the mud. You might want to hold on a little tighter, said Bowler, tipping Cole back onto his shoulders. He then pointed at a mushy, greenish-black oozing spot in the swampy ground and said, That one's a real dipper. You'd hate to put your head in it, wouldn't you? The jovial Bowler had returned. It had only taken him a matter of minutes to seemingly forgive Dungo and Tredicello and move on to happier thoughts. Thanks, said Cole, feeling grateful Bowler had caught him. He looked around at the surroundings and tried to change them with his mind. If this is my dream, he thought, I ought to be able to get us out of this putrid place, or at least make my back stop hurting. Cole strained and strained. He squinted his eyes and furrowed his brow. But it didn't work. Nothing happened. His back still hurt, and the mud still stunk. The bog turned out to be much larger than it had originally appeared from the cliff's edge. It continued deep into the forest. Willows and various water-loving trees cropped up right out of the mire, while other less resilient trees and bushes grew in dense pockets on small islands of rockier soil. Together, they turned the landscape into a maze. While enduring the bombardment, Cole had wished to stroll through the woods. However, now that he was doing it, he realized it wasn't very pleasant. Aside from not needing to worry about the sky-raining rocks, there were few benefits. Flies and bugs came in waves off the muddy foliage, looking for places to land. They particularly seemed to enjoy swarming around Cole's head, which greatly irritated him, especially the pesky gnats. I've gone mad, he thought, shaking his hands back and forth through his hair to disrupt the landing visitors. He smacked and whacked until the buzzing temporarily stopped. Of all the places I could have chosen to dream about, It had to be a bog. And with the likes of him! Cole glanced at Dungo, who continued to plod behind Tritacello, rigidly keeping pace. "Are you all right up there?" asked Bowler, tilting his head around. He had heard Cole's whacking and wondered what was going on. "I'm fine," lied Cole, looking down at Bowler. He suddenly realized that he didn't know anything about him, which was unusual, considering Cole's dreamlike memories had already shed plenty of light on Tritacello and Dungo. So feeling like he'd jilted the kindest of his dream's participants, he set out to create facts about Bowler. Nothing came. Minutes passed by with plenty of flies and plenty of sloshing, but still nothing about Bowler. Finally, giving up, Cole nudged him. "Why don't I know very much about you?" he asked, feeling dumb. "I suppose it's because we haven't been properly introduced." Tritacello halted his march in a particularly smelly part of the bog to interrupt. "Shh," he said. "If you must talk, at least drop it to the droning whisper, like the buzzing of flies or rustling of grange weeds. I'm terribly concerned about making it over the big hill before Dredarius knows which way we're headed." "Fair enough," said Bowler softly, lowering his booming voice to a whisper. "You lead and I'll drone back here with Dodd." When the procession started again, Bowler began to explain. "As I was saying, I'm Bowler of the Dryadons. You don't know very much about me because we've only just met this morning, but I know a little of you. I watched you compete in the trials a while back. You're impressive, especially considering how young you are." "I'm 14, argued Cole, defending his age. "Right," chuckled Bowler. "Anyway, where did you learn to yarn and cut with your rod? Don't only noble billies use one like that?" The change in conversation to Billy's lit a fire deep down in Cole. "Noble," he said scoffingly. "They're hardly noble. After 8 years en route with a band of billies, you learn a few tricks. I guess some skills are gained when you're fighting to survive. They're all thieving pirates, the whole lot of them. I haven't met a noble one yet." Waves of memories faded in and out of Cole's mind. Billies were mean and had treated him poorly. Or was it someone else? That element was foggy. "So you've seen them?" asked Bowler, kinking his neck to make eye contact. "Seen them?" barked Cole. "I saw plenty of them. I saw them every day while I served them aboard their ships. Until... Cole's voice settled as he strained to recall how the memories fit together, leading up to where he was. But they didn't. And before he could figure them out, they faded. I ended up with Tritacello," he finally croaked. "He's the one who took me to the trials." "Oh," responded Bowler. He turned around and noticed that they were falling behind, so he picked up his pace and focused on jogging instead of talking. At times, he had to sprint to keep up. Tritacello's physical abilities were impressive. His capability to cut through the swamp, seemingly with ease, clearly surpassed anyone Cole had ever met. And he wasn't just running knee-deep in mud. There were vines and branches to duck under. Not to mention, the old man regularly found that they were boxed in, necessitating he lead them, clawing and squirming through the densest of debris. The slough was treacherous terrain, to say the least. No one in their right mind would follow them through it. During the ordeal, Bowler couldn't chat, even if he wanted to, since the vigorous exercise made him pant. But Cole didn't mind. He spent the hour and a half deep in thought, trying to piece together a logical explanation for everything, while hanging on tightly to Bowler's fur. His brief conversation with Bowler regarding Billy's had given him plenty to think about. The feelings he harbored toward them seemed genuinely raw, stemming from mysterious memories. It was baffling. Where did the information come from? And then there was the nagging issue of the name Dodd. It sounded familiar, like it fit him, but why? It wasn't that Cole felt like abandoning his own name, yet for some strange reason, Dodd also felt right. It was just one of his other names. After all, Cole did have multiple names. At home, he was Cole, or Big C. Among some childhood acquaintances, he was Coley. At the barber shop, he was Mr. Richards. And at the ice cream parlor, he was Buddy Big Scoop. Now, in this strange situation, Dodd was his name, and it fit perfectly. Dodd, whispered Cole to himself. He did feel like a Dodd. He nearly said it again, but was interrupted by Bowler, who poked at him and pointed at Tritacello. He's quite an old steady mast of a treader, isn't he? Said Bowler, almost reverently. His tone hinted that he was working on a joke. I like him like a father. He seems to have a really keen eye for planning, and that's pretty good for someone old enough to hardly see where he's headed with the two he's got. I heard that, chimed Tritacello, as he climbed a small embankment out of the bog. His pants were muddy up to his knees, and his shoes were caked 3 layers deep. But when he turned around to face Dungo and Bowler, he cracked a faint smile. A first of the day. Exiting the swamplands and having successfully left the troubles of the cliffs far behind gave him grounds to ease up. "And for your information," Tritocello continued, speaking factually, "a treader's vision gets better with age, not worse." "Then I'll remember that the next time you lead us into a thorny mess of swamp briars like you did shortly ago," teased Bowler. "Dungo and I took pity on your poor sight and followed quietly anyhow." "If you call that quiet," returned Tritocello, nearly cheery. He stopped by a trickling stream and began to wash his pants and shoes. "I don't remember your exact words," he continued, "but I think they were something like, 'Ouch, this little teeny-weeny thorn has damaged my big toe.' Yes, I think that's what you said." "Well, I think you got it right when you said you didn't remember exactly what I said," quipped Bowler, swinging Dodd carefully to the ground. "But we'll forgive you. After all, forgetfulness is something you've earned at your age." "Then don't forget it, just in case I do," responded Tritocello. He scrubbed until the mud was gone and then perched on a log while he changed his socks and shoes. He had spares in his larger pack. Dungo and Bowler both worked side by side at the water's edge, trying to clean up, though Bowler's earnestness was unsurpassed. The glanterworm slime had certainly done its miserable job of tormenting him. Dodd took the chance to sprawl out on the ground by the brook. He hadn't even walked an inch of the journey. However, just staying on Bowler's shoulders had been difficult for him in his current condition, especially while enduring the waves of dizziness that came and went. They, along with the pain in his head and back, made life unpleasant. When Tritocello had finished lacing his dry leather boots, he drew a slender vial from his open bag and approached Dodd. "Here you go," he said, popping the cork off before handing Dodd the container. "I warned you about eating sweets this morning. That kind of folly will poison your day just as readily as an enemy's hand. Remember it." Dodd hadn't the slightest what Tritocello was talking about, but if he thought the medicine would help, Dodd wasn't about to refuse it. "Thanks," said Dodd, propping up on one elbow to drink it down. The flavor was nasty, like cough syrup mixed with rotten fruit. "It'll settle your stomach," added Tritocello, somewhat piously. 2 hours of scaling is enough to sicken anyone unprepared. You're just lucky we had Bowler to carry you. Next time might be your last if you don't start learning what I've got to teach you. The nudging and whispers won't warn you to pack clean shoes or eat well, and as far as I'm concerned, things like that are just as important as being the fastest at climbing. Tritocello drew 3 heaping sandwiches from his bag for himself and Dungo and Bowler before returning to Dodd's side. He wasn't done scolding him for the list of things that Dodd couldn't even remember. Tritocello vented like an angry parent who had been saving up for a long time. Bowler sat in the creek, cooling his backside while eating. Nevertheless, his occasional glances made Dodd feel better about the lengthy reprimand, like someone else thought it was a little too harsh. Dungo, on the other hand, didn't even seem to notice the fuss. He devoured his food and then interrupted the womping session, hoping for Tritocello's leftovers or Dodd's uneaten lunch. After the lecture, Tritocello announced that he would be leaving for a few minutes to scale the biggest tree in sight in order to check for Dredarius's possible deployment of flutters. He grabbed his noculars, 2 grappling hooks, and a length of coiled rope and headed off, though a few minutes later he returned to recruit a second climber. Dungo protested at first when chosen, suggesting that he wanted to stay by Dodd's side to make sure his condition improved. Yet the moment Tritocello snapped his fingers, Dungo hopped to his feet and trotted along obediently. Bowler waited until the twosome was far enough away before laughing. "I don't know, Dodd," he said happily. "I think some people are too intense. If you can't eat pie for breakfast when you're young, the world's really in a load of trouble, the kind you and I can't fix." "Is that what I ate?" asked Dodd, looking at Bowler. "I don't remember." "Good for you," he responded, chuckling. His dark brown eyes were friendly and caring. "It's best to forget it. Tritocello spoke his mind out of concern for you, so dwelling on the particulars isn't necessary, is it? Why be mad when you can choose to be happy?" "Right," said Dodd hesitantly. He really had wondered what sweets he had supposedly eaten that had poisoned his day. But Bowler's angle was just as good. It didn't matter either way. "Thanks for carrying me," he added, truly grateful. "If I had tried to walk through that bog, I wouldn't have made it." "That's all right," insisted Bowler. "You couldn't possibly weigh a pound over 200. Carrying you is like hefting a picnic lunch for my family back home.
Oh, said Dodd,
imagining a gunny sack full of fried chicken. Where is home for you?
Up north, responded Bowler. My family herds sheep and cows. You know, animals don't seem to mind the way we look.
Why would anyone care? Asked Dodd, perplexed.
Are you serious? Choked Bowler. You're weirder than I thought, kid.
And crazy, too, added Dodd, feeling somewhat delirious from the medicine, which still hadn't stopped the pain. I think my brain has flipped. I mean, look at me. Here I am, off helping Dungo steal a sparkly thing.
You mean me, corrected Bowler. Dungo wouldn't even get in the water. And I didn't steal it. I just retrieved it. If Dredarius gets his thieving hands on another 4 or 5 triblots, we would all be in big trouble. He'd have the ability to create an impenetrable stronghold.
Oh, yeah, sighed Dodd, catching glimpses in his mind. Has anyone ever told you your fur is softer than it looks?
What? Asked Bowler. Are you calling me feminine?
He let out a restrained chuckle and splashed water at Dodd. My fur may be soft, but it's macho soft, not girly soft.
Okay, right, said Dodd, not quite sure why he had brought it up, other than the fact that he was feeling extremely tired.
I just thought it looked more like the coarse hair of a guinea pig I once had.
A guinea pig? What kind of creature is that? It must be from one of the other realms.
All right, said Dodd. Now you have me confused again. What do you mean, other realms?
You know, Rollin Soosh, responded Bowler, pulling rocks out of the creek to make a bigger hole to sit in. I've lived all of my life here in Green, so I don't know very much about the others, but they say there's a lot of untamed ground in Soosh. Plenty of space for weird creatures and stuff. Just look at Dungo. That's where he's from.
No wonder, sighed Dodd, glancing over his shoulder toward the towering tree that Tritacella was scaling. Dungo was hidden from view on the opposite side.
And Soosh is where the last of the Dryadons came from, too, Bowler added. They were fleeing war. Bloody treaders in Soosh. Only about 200 of us are left now. Mostly my family. We owe our escape to Bamboo.
I'm sorry about that, said Dodd, trying to be polite. His eyelids were so heavy. He closed them and felt himself drifting off. Perhaps if I sleep, I'll awaken, he thought. And then he was out.